The Cabrini Green High Rises once housed 15,000 people on Chicago's Near North Side, a public housing project that came to symbolize public housing for both the city and the country. The buildings became notorious for crime and drug activity and bad living conditions. By 2011, the last of the buildings had been demolished. Ben Austin wrote about the projects in his new book, High Risers, Cabrini Green and the Fate of American Public Housing. He joins us now. Ben, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, these projects, Cabrini Green, were a symbol of despair in many ways when they came down. They were a symbol of hope when they went up and an amazing improvement in living conditions for a lot of people. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, when these were built, the proof that the private market couldn't build housing for the poor and for the working class was just obvious in homeless shelters, in eviction riots, in cities that were covered with blight, and in houses that were completely unfit for habitation.
Right, and some of the people and some of the stories you recount in your book, it's people moving from places that were fire traps, falling down almost literally, overpriced along the way, plaster and paint falling into the food, and unheated or maybe heated with a little coal burner, I think. Cabrini Green was like paradise compared to that.
Yeah, and it's great that you said the word paradise, because one of the things that comes up again and again with interviews of early residents, they describing it as heaven or as paradise or as something godly, meaning the damnation of its absence before, that just a basic rudimentary home feels like deliverance. You know, that you're safe in your house, that it's orderly and decent and new, and even that there's a government agency that you could call when you have a problem rather than the landlord whom, you know, might as well put you out rather than fix something.
Now, Cabrini Green was a powerful symbol in a good way maybe then, in a bad way toward the end. In your book, though, you kind of remind us that it wasn't just a symbol. There were people living their lives, all of their lives in some cases, in this project. What were you trying to show here?
Yeah, so it's an intimate portrait of people who made homes in this place that was a symbol, that was infamous, that was a sort of horror story version of life. But there were real people and a rich fabric of life there. Sometimes in spite of real traumatic situations, and sometimes really just separate from that. I mean, in an area of 15 to 20,000 people, you have all kinds of lives going on. One of the things I write about is the horror movie Candyman, which is set at Cabrini Green in the 90s. And, you know, when you think about how horror works, it's imagining the terrible thing in that space that you can't see. And that everything, you know, in the thing that you can't see, it must also be terrible and horrible. And that was really what this was like, you know, sort of, you know, writing off the entire place as a horror story. And therefore, you know, a lot of that hardening into actual policy, which ends up removing people. And even if a place like that needed to be better, you know, it almost guaranteed that the people who live there wouldn't gain from the moves.
A running thread through your book, as you follow the stories of a group of people, different individuals in Cabrini Green, was they didn't really have much control over the place they lived, and a lot of people tried to change that and became housing activists to say, hey, if we had a stake here, if we had a say here, things might not be so bad. Can you talk about that part of the story?
Yeah, I mean, like, all of our lives are controlled by forces larger than us, and I think when you're poor, and especially on, say, government aid, even more so. You know, that these larger forces make determinations that suddenly, you know, radical shifts in your life. You know, something that is decided in Washington suddenly means that you have to leave your home. And, you know, residents did have a lot of agency at the same time. They had elected tenant councils. They organized. One of the things I see is that, you know, so even beyond public housing is almost a way to talk about our uneasiness with poverty, you know, throughout the history of this country. So I mean, I write about Cabrini Green, I write about Chicago, but it's really about our past in every city and as a country, and about our present. And you know, we get rid of public housing, and we used to literally own this problem, and now it's almost more invisible, and the people have less agency by because of it.
Talking to Ben Austin, his new book is High Risers, Cabrini Green and the Fate of American Public Housing. Speaking tonight, by the way, at 6 in Madison at a Room of One's Own bookstore. Ben, this is also a story of race. And yeah. From the beginning, if a black person attempted to move into a white neighborhood or get a job that was seen as a white job, they were met with violence. I mean, not just discrimination, but actual bombs and violence. Talk about that part of the story of how this particular solution of public housing happened.
Yeah, as dire as housing conditions were for everyone in Chicago in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they were much worse for African Americans. They were barred from the open housing market. They couldn't get government loans. They couldn't move into neighborhoods. So they needed the intervention of government more than anybody, to find a decent home. And I talked about the uneasiness of poverty, and often in the country we conflate that with race. In Chicago, and this is true of elsewhere also, that the public housing was placed only in existing black slums because of whites who rioted at the idea that public housing might bring integration.
Are there lessons we can learn today from Cabrini Green?
No doubt. I mean, I think about where we are right now as a country, and even the incredible inequality that we have in this country, and even sort of our fears of race, and even kind of the fear mongering of Chicago, which I'm hearing from the President of the United States, which feels a lot like how Cabrini Green was talked about throughout its existence. When public housing was being demolished, when high-rise public housing was being demolished, the evil that was talked about was concentrated poverty and isolation, and it would only be benefit to get rid of that. So you're seeing in places like Chicago, we still have concentrated poverty and isolation, and if you're hearing about Chicago now, it's often about for things like gun violence, we have a lot of these same problems. We're not wrestling with them. We're not looking for the correct solutions. I know even here, that in the legislature, there was just sort of passing some new restrictions on social safety net programs. This is also a rural problem, that if you lose affordable housing in a rural area, there is no other option. You have to basically move. There's no other place to go.
That reminds me of one kind of symbolic moment in your book. One of the designers of one of the Cabrini Green buildings had this fancy-looking sign with the address on it, in metal, I think. And it was actually cheaper than a lot of the alternatives. And whoever was in charge said, no, it looks too fancy. We don't want this public housing thing to look like it was at all expensive.
Yeah.
Is that symbolic, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sort of this trickiness of having to provide something for the poor, but only to make it just so. Then as now, meaning then even back in the 30s and 40s, we still had this uneasiness, and there was incredible opposition to the idea of public housing. That's moved much further into the mainstream, and so we're still wrestling with that for sure.
We haven't focused much on the individual stories in your book, but as people looked back on life in Cabrini Green, obviously there were bad things they remembered. Was there some sense of a positive nostalgia along with that?
Oh, completely. I mean, one of the first things you hear from almost any resident is we knew everyone. We were like family. And you built up these networks often by necessity. And, to be poor in public housing and to have these networks and family, and then to be poor elsewhere in the city without them is much worse. You've lost these support networks, which formed over years.
We'll leave it there. Ben, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, so A Room of One's Own tonight at 6. Thank you.
That's Ben Austin. He joined us to talk about his new book, High Risers, Cabrini Green, and the Fate of American Public Housing. As you just heard, he is speaking tonight in Madison at 6 at A Room of One's Own bookstore.